Woo.
Hi, I'm Erin. I'm an alcoholic. And
hi.
And today is the 17th of December, 2022. We are in the MSCA 09 archives. And I am going to be interviewing Jill, last initial?
I.
Jill I. from Norco, who has 37 years. This tape is produced for the Mid-Southern California Area Archives and as such will not be reproduced for other uses. This tape will remain in the custody of Mid-Southern California Area Archives. Do I have your permission to tape the interview?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Now it says to state my name again. Okay, I've done all that. All right, so I'm going to start the interview. I think I've covered everything, hopefully. Okay, so first, Jill, how did you find Alcoholics Anonymous?
Hi, thanks for having me today. Thanks for Ron's the one that originally asked me, and then I talked with Bob. It's always an honor to be asked to come and show up, even though I don't like to public speak, but I feel so grateful to the fact that I've been able to be a member of this group that I feel that I can't say no. I've been told I can't say no. Mm-hmm. But
How did I find AA?
Yeah. Now, I am one of those people that I didn't come from a normal family and I was a black sheep. I came from an alcoholic home. So that my first introduction to what AA was about and my understanding that it existed was in the late 60s. My father was the alcoholic, and my mom hauled us off to Alateens in Orange County. We went to the Garden Grove Club a lot. We went to the Stanton one, and I believe it was Westgate over there off of Valley View, and she told us that our dad was an alcoholic. The big book came into our house. My dad left, and she warned us that we could be alcoholics. And the thing that I remember about one of the biggest thing about trying to understand what an alcoholic was, because my dad was always passed out on the couch, so I really didn't know what an alcoholic was. And I was about 9, and there was a duck at the front of this one group before you walked into the meetings. And it was in a cage, and they said that the duck was an alcoholic. So I was always like, what? And they said that the bowl of water, I know now it was water, was alcohol. And he said it was an alcoholic duck. So I never really quite understood that till later on. I heard that if you walk like a duck, talk like a duck, and crack like a duck, you must be a duck like an alcoholic. But that always stood out to me, and then the Serenity Prayer really stuck to me, but I didn't really get the concept of what an alcoholic was. My mom tried to see if she was qualified, and they sent her back to Al-Anon. So anyways, that was my beginning to AA.
Okay, so what do you remember about your first meeting?
Okay, that came later. That came in 85. I had just done another geographic. I was blaming it on the Bermuda Triangle, and I realized that disco probably had a part in it, too, at what my problems were. So I moved from Florida to California, and 6 months after that, my brother checked himself into a care unit, and he was put in his jammies for 7 days. And so that Sunday, my other brother and his friend dropped him off there after a night of partying, and, of course, they didn't check themselves in at that time. But a week later, he was loud out of to put on regular clothes, out of his jammies, out of detox. And so I went as a good sister to support him. And within a week or so, I found myself sitting in a meeting with him at the care unit.
All right. How did you get a sponsor? Was it appointed to you, or did you need to ask somebody?
I was very confused when I came into AA. I didn't know which room I belonged in. I like to say I came in through the back door. That's what I heard other people that had come in through the back door. And so at that care unit, it was like, you know, how they say coincidences. Don't think so. One of the counselors there was the mother of one of my best friends from Dana Point, and this is Orange County, and she agreed to take me on as to see me, and she saw me twice a week for a while, for the first 3 months, and she was in AA, and she basically just had me work worksheets to try to figure out which room I belonged in. At that time, I was had gotten directories and was going to meetings all over Orange County. I was going to all the four A's, no, the three A's and the N meetings. And so I didn't know which room I qualified for, but I was managing to stay reasonably sane and clean and sober. And she eventually, after 3 months, we went to one day a week, and then after 6 months, she let me go. And I'm like, okay, I need to get a sponsor. And she had worked the first three steps with me through the meetings. And I really didn't officially have my big book yet. And I met a gal at the end meeting, and she identified as the AA, you know, alcoholic addict. And I'm like, okay, she's perfect for me because she's identifying as both. And I asked her to be my sponsor.
Well, that leads me to that question down further, which is, how did you get your first big book?
She gave it to me.
She just gave it.
I still have it. And it has that little plastic cover on it, and it's just the Serenity on it.
What edition was that?
The third. And it was, I looked at it, it was published in 1985, so it wasn't until 86, because it was in August, so 6 months later it was into 86. So yeah, I still have that big book. I started to highlight it the way everybody else does. I'm so impressed at how everybody highlights and underlines and does all the stuff in the meetings. And the whole page turned yellow. I stopped doing that because I decided that, you know, everything was important in the book to me. And I remember one time I was meeting my sponsor. She had saved me a seat. She put her big book on the chair, and she was in Sunset, and I was in living in Norco at this time, so I drove in, and she had it there, and I thought she was going to give it to me, and she had it all highlighted. I'm like, oh my God, what if you like to have her book? But it wasn't. She was just saving the seat for me.
Okay, so were you, what was your first home group, and were you told to get a home group?
Okay, now that's an odd word for me, because as you hear, you know, the first 6 months I didn't know which room I belonged in. So there were certain meetings that I went to regularly that were involved in all of the areas. And, you know, after 30 days, my brother got out, and I started kind of following him to meetings, too. And my mom had gotten sober at the same time. She was a week after me. We were all within a month, so we were kind of a pack. And I went to Sunset Beach Thursday, so I would say that was pretty much my home group. And there was also, I would attend meetings over at Rossmore and the Harbor area, and Hal Hall opened up 2 years into my sobriety, and went to the Costa Mesa Club, went to just, I had a directory, and I went to a lot of them, but mainly it was Thursdays.
Do you remember there being a difference in the formatting of these meetings? Are they similar to your meetings today, or do you not remember?
No, I was thinking about that, because I don't know if I've just managed to progress into whatever it's like now, but, you know, we read the traditions, chapter 3, chapter 5, a vision for you, the promises. We had the announcements at the end of the meeting. We had a board of directors. We had announcements for H&I, for intergroup, and GSRs. So that was going on.
So were you at? Were you mainly going to a club, or were you going to meetings outside of clubs as well?
Well, they, I from the restaurant industry, so my schedule was always changing, and so the clubs were great. I remember people saying that, you know, they didn't like noon meetings because nobody had a job. And I'm like, no, I had a job, and I went to a lot of noon meetings, and I met a lot of cool people at noon meetings, and the clubs were the ones that had the noon meetings. I tried to do the attitude adjustment meetings, but if I didn't have to set my alarm, I didn't want to. But, you know, there was, you know, I would follow my sponsor is what I would do. Whatever meetings they were going to, I would be there, and then also whatever fill-ins I needed to do.
Okay. I'm going to skip ahead to, because I think it was really funny, about your first commitment, and we had to check up here to see what it was. So if you haven't put your post-it up there, I didn't remember mine either. So make sure to put your post-it, because you might be asked later, and it'll help you remember. So what was your first commitment?
It's over there on the wall. It says I was a chip chick. I know it was over at Thursday's 5 o'clock Saturday meeting. That was a social event. It was a good meeting. It was a participation meeting. But, yeah, it was a chip chick.
Did you run for that or were you railroaded?
There was a lot of railroading going on in that time. I don't remember because it was kind of random. I mean, there were times when they would say a commitment opened up and a bunch of people would raise their hand and we'd vote and everybody had to leave the room and you hope you didn't hurt anybody's feelings. And then there were also everybody kind of looking around and like, that person would be good. And then there was always the premeditated ones, you know, where like, that person would be good for it. So that was what was going on.
That totally sounds familiar. Did you have refreshments provided by the meeting?
Yes.
Yes.
Cookies.
Oh, awesome.
Lots of cookies.
I love that. When did the seventh tradition basket get passed? Was it?
Most of the time it was at the end of the meeting. I remember there were a couple that would be kind of randomly passed around. And because I remember watching the court cards and how some of the secretaries would sign them and then the people would run and grab them. And then you'd have the secretaries that would leave them there and not sign them and make them wait to the end of the meeting. So it was kind of interesting to watch how that went. So
I'm skipping again. It's a question about the, because you have 37 years and a lot of these older timers talk about the really low bottoms, and then it's been raised. Do you see more court cards and the bottom being raised from 37 years ago?
Now, I got sober in 85. I read something interesting. I was kind of like Bob. I'm like trying to figure out the dates on some things. So it's hard to find some of them. But they were talking about how in the 80s that, you know, the marijuana movement started because they didn't want to be like the Irish pub people where they were wife beaters and throwing up everywhere. So it was kind of a different trend when I came in on what the alcoholics were like. And I had mentioned to Bob H. that I remember before I took the chip chip commitment that's, you know, there was a gentleman that would come to the meeting and say they needed people to go to a panel. And I was pretty new and he took me from Sunset to Long Beach to Redgate. And my brother brought it up because it was his sponsor that was doing that. And there were a lot of low-bottom people there, and I was 24 years old, almost 25, and 25, and I was just like, what do I have to offer him? But, you know, I was willing to do whatever it took to stay sober, so I just shared my story. But they were pretty beaten up then, too.
Okay. So that brings me to, did you socialize before, did you socialize after meetings, and did you have a group? Was that normal to socialize, to go out after the meeting?
Definitely. Well, Thursdays was known as the meat market. Down by the beach, a lot of good-looking people, a lot of newcomers. I was impressed if you had 6 months. But I was so sick, and I really listened to him when they said, you know, no, I wasn't in a relationship, so no relationship for the first year. So I wasn't even looking at that stuff. But they're like, if you pay attention when you walk out of the meeting, they're all lined up. And sure enough, they are all lined up. So there was a lot of 13-stepping going on at that time. I know there were dances going on, and somebody asked me to go to one, but I was just too sick to be even into that. And but I know there was a lot of socializing going on. I did go to some events that were AA events, and we did meet to eat. And where I worked, a lot of people showed up there that were coming from meetings. You know, they say the best meetings are the ones before and after. You know, you got there early and you left late, so you can talk. They always said the same thing then too. If you didn't get a chance to share, pull somebody over. And there were plenty of people that were new, and there were a lot of people that were old-timers that were willing to lend a hand. And they were, so despite the 13-stepping, there was a lot of recovery going on. And I know that, at the Rossmore one, It was a long time thing that they did. They met at the Paracel restaurant, and they loved to take the newcomers there to give them big sundaes. It was a big thing about drinking sweets, or eating sweets, you know, and when you're new. I know for me, I drank hot chocolate every night for a year because of that suggestion, and it did help.
So coming along the line of the question of celebrating, did you celebrate your birthday milestones differently then, or how did you celebrate them then compared to how you celebrate milestones now?
I believe that chips were given out a lot more freely, and I laugh because everybody wore them. You know, they were the keychains. We were swinging them around. We had them on our purse. We had them on our necks. We had them everywhere. And I think I got to the point where people were, like, celebrating for the entire week. And at that time, they did have the AA's thing on the back of the chips. And I collected them, and I gave them away, and went through different spells with that, and then heard that, you know, they lost the AA thing on it, and then they were, because they said, you know, how important they are. But for me, the first year, those chips were meant so much to me, you know, that, you know, that's what it motivated me. And then between a year and 2 years was the longest time of my life. No chips, no acknowledgement. But, you know, that's when really one day at a time became important to me. That, you know, it was about one day at a time. It wasn't about reaching those milestones. But, yeah, I remember when I celebrated my first year, and they're like, are you going to have a party? I'm like, I don't know how to have a party without drinking. So it was just really an odd moment. You know, how do you party for your birthday? But I did go to a lot of birthday parties for AA, too.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, so what was your first general service commitment?
We were talking about that at the Friday, 10 o'clock meeting. I was GSR there. You know, my first one I was telling you was for the other group, and it was in 86, and they were rewriting the book, so it was very overwhelming for me being new and not understanding what general service was about. So I just kind of was a big blur for me, but I know they were rewriting the book, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of work to be and a lot of responsibility. That was for there, but then later I've done intergroup, and I've done general service, and did corrections, and I love the school, the general service school. I love the way he said that. He goes, you know, after a 2-year commitment, you're going to finally figure out what you're supposed to be doing here, which is, I felt was true. But
so that was more recent in your school.
Yeah, it was more recent. And, you know, I was thinking because, you know, I raised 2 children in sobriety, mm-hmm. and I got to be a soccer mom, and I got to be a room mom, and I got to volunteer for the arts group. And you guys taught me how to be of service out in the community, too, and participate in my children's lives and my own life and my coworkers. You know, I was able to take AA with me in society. So as far as my commitments, you know, it was a lot more about having secretary positions, treasurer positions, and not so much the more general service until later when my kids, you know, I lived long enough to raise them and got to do more commitments like that. And in fact, I look forward to retiring and eventually, hopefully, if I still am alive, get to do more of it.
Yes. That's my plan, too.
Yeah, I know. Hey, some
okay.
future plans.
So, where am I going? Did you, what was your first convention? And it says, how was it different? But I know you told me it was recent, your first convention.
Yeah. I worked weekends, so I never had, and then I had kids. If we went vacationing, it was SeaWorld or Disneyland. It wasn't conventions. I had heard about conventions. My sponsor went to conventions. I heard them shared about. I saw pictures. But, you know, it wasn't one thing that was a part of my story. I mean, I had to pick and choose. Keeping a balance in my life, and then, you know, actually the person that took me to my first conventions in the room is Linda, and I went as Diane Smith. This is an honest program. I still have my little lanyard. We went over to Laughlin, and it was a lot of fun, and it was fun being Diane for the weekend. She couldn't go, so I got to take her spot.
Oh, cool. Have you participated, or did you participate in workshops or retreats?
No, that was not another luxury of mine. That's why I was like going, oh, there's some of these questions I don't have answers for, because it wasn't, you know, a thing that I was able to do. And, you know, it's like I had to really struggle and make an effort to be able to get to meetings at certain times in my life. And it made it more important, and I appreciated the times I was here. You know, I know some of you have had the luxury of being to freely to go to any meetings you want and regularly attend them. But, you know, for me it was, you know, I had to set up with everybody else to make sure I can take care of myself, because if I didn't take care of myself, I couldn't do the rest of the stuff in my life.
That totally makes sense. Okay, is there anything from the past that you kind of miss that you'd like to see come back again?
Oh, Linda knows this, railroading. You know, I really feel like it's my responsibility to encourage people that are newer to get active in AA. And, you know, my sponsor said just, you know, go do it. And I don't regret ever going and doing it. It just made me feel more a part of this group, more connected, and made me feel better about myself and taught me how to act out in the world too. And so I think it's important for us, the ones that have been around for a while, to encourage people that are newer to take commitments and to help them learn how to do the commitments and support them.
Well, I like that answer. Okay. Okay, do you have a favorite AA literature, piece of literature? And you mentioned you could maybe talk about one of the pieces of literature you thought you kind of looked for but couldn't find.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was looking through my purse because I still have phone number lists from a long time ago. And I still have Just for Today. I remember as a kid, my mom had this little bowl where she had sliced up Just for Today, and she would pull them out. You know, like I remember the one that I can do anything for 12 hours that I would be appalled to if I had to do the rest of my life. And she incorporated that in our lives, the things from Just from Today. And, you know, they taught us to early on to do things without getting found out. And I still have a little card that says the promises on it that somebody slipped in my purse at a meeting, which I think is really cool. And, of course, I love the 20 questions, especially if it has the central office on it with a phone number on it. Those are really helpful, especially when you're going to a panel in the prisons. Because you give them a phone number to call, because we're not really allowed to give out information. And, you know, 20 questions if you qualify for the meeting. And then also problems other than alcohol, to know if you qualify to be in an AA meeting if you have other elements.
Okay, so you told me about one you were kind of looking for, and there's nothing. Do you remember this? That like an old-timer.
Yeah, well, I know. She was talking to me about, you know, about being a bleeding deacon, or AA's watered down. You know, I'm totally amazed at the fact that, you know, because when I came in 85, you know, it was just after Betty Ford had opened up, Hazelton had come out, you know, our president, ex-president's wife was talking about alcoholism and drug addiction, and a lot of famous people were getting clean and sober. And there was a lot of confusion on that. And, you know, a lot of us that came in 85 were identifying as alcoholic addicts. And there was a talk in their rooms that they were going to go underground because we were infiltrating the meetings. And, you know, that's why I love that pamphlet. And, you know, in my book, the story Dr. Alcoholic Addict was important to me because I identified with it. And I know they changed the title because of dual addicted people were using that sentence. And But it helped me keep coming back and stay clean and sober. And, you know, I've worked in a restaurant where this woman was said she was in AA for 10 years. And I was so impressed with her because I was newly sober. And she bought a bag of pot in front of me. And I'm just like, that's not the kind of recovery that's going to work for me. I need both. So I went to the other places, too. So there's the fact that there was a lot of confusion going on with that. And then during the times of changes that you guys have managed to keep this singleness of purpose. And now, of course, I don't identify that in the meeting. I know the traditions. When I hear that they're broken, I believe they should be spoken. And it's very uncomfortable. I hate being the minority in the room. And I do feel like we do have a responsibility to speak up when they are being broken, the traditions. But also, you know, as Bill sees, it's helped me a lot of having long-term sobriety because I've gone into meetings where I'm just like, oh, my gosh, what is going on here? And feeling that they were getting off track and learning that, you know, meetings have a right to conduct themselves the way they're going to conduct themselves as long as it doesn't hurt AA as a whole, and learning how to communicate with central office at the, you know, it's just kind of a strange structure and is really a miracle that it survived. So there's been times that I really felt like I was being a bleeding deacon and really being judgmental of the meetings and wondering where to go and looking for literature is what I was talking about. You know, looking for books to read about people that had long-term sobriety. I mean, you know, I reread the AA book. I go to Big Book Studies. I work with people. You know, it's like, what do you do with long-term sobriety? And, you know, and I know it's the same stuff that I've always done since the beginning, but I mean, it's just how can I be effective? Because I feel like the newer people need to be in the service commitments. I was told that 4 years sober, I was going to take a commitment. My sponsor said, no, we'll let the other person do it because you've already done it. And it reminded me that, you know, you have to allow the newer people to come in and participate. And so that gap of knowing what do the old timers, how can we be productive members in here?
Yeah, so I think the suggested pamphlet is something like how to not become a pleading deacon. We don't have that pamphlet. Okay, any closing thoughts, something I didn't ask you you would like to share?
No, I don't know. I mean, I was just kind of fun going down memory lane, because when I first got Bob sent me the questions, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like I need to be a historian here. I need to know all these dates and stuff. But then when the gentleman had mentioned our personal stories and our personal history, and that's what I have to bring to the table. And I did learn some dates, like I learned about how Thursdays was originally opened in 81, and I know that, I don't know who the founders were, I know a name Mary came up, but they were originally across the street on Pacific Coast Highway. They had, were at the Woman's Club, and they rented this spot, and they rented it since 81, and then I guess a couple years ago, the owner passed away, and before the children put it on the market, they offered to sell it. And I guess I brought up a big controversy, and but they managed to get the money together, and I guess the group kind of split over, and I guess that happens. You know, I know that, you know, Serenity Club, I was trying to look up the history. I came here in 28 years ago, and I started off at the movie theater, then the house, then the other side of the Grand, and then to the mall, and now it's over there. But I heard during COVID that they broke up and they had some controversy, you know. But, you know, I just try to keep in my heart that, you know, because I've witnessed it, that, you know, the heart of AA rises, and, you know, I believe the higher source keeps us together in the long term, even though we're throwing chairs. But and that, you know, a coffee pot and a resentment's a good start to a new meeting. Guess that's it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.